Hello and welcome to IndieLive.radio. We've got the studio's quite busy today. We've got Val and Marlene from Pensioners for Indie, Glasgow, and it's great to see you again.
Hi there.
Hiya.
And we've got Andy Anderson. Andy, you've done all this stuff with currency, so we're going to be talking to you about that today, but also, you know, the report into the voting in Argyll, IndyRef, but well, I don't think we'll be touching on that too much today. Just mainly the currency, yeah?
Well, whatever you like.
You'll talk about anything?
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. I've got these up on the screen now. So if you're watching on the live stream, just to let you know, when we put music on, you won't be able to hear anything, right? I'll switch over to a graphic, so, you know, and there'll be a message there, right, saying you can't listen to the music, right? We're not allowed to live stream copyright music, okay? So that's the reason. Okay, so where should we kick off? Who wants to go first? Andy, you've got a book out, is that right?
Yes, I've just put out another book on a clean currency for a prosperous Scotland.
I tell you what, can you give me that book over and I'll put it up in front of the camera keys a sec, folks. Right, sorry about that, a little bit of a shifty across the table there. So this is the book here. I'll try and get the graphic for it and stream it out, but again, this is for the live stream viewers. If you're listening to the radio, you're not going to know about it. Right, so for the radio viewers only, right, A Clean Currency for a Prosperous Scotland by Andy Anderson, okay? And where can you get this book, Andy?
Well, it's being sold through the Yes groups rather than through the shops, so it's Yes groups that are ordering it, but you can get it online.
All right, okay, so... Sorry,
so I was just thinking, Andy, I know this is an updated version, isn't it? It's a new edition. What is there anything new in it from the first edition?
Well, the first book that I wrote was with Ronnie Morrison.
Oh, yeah.
Moving on. And in that book, we went into some detail about our argument about how the currency should be structured in Scotland. The new book doesn't actually, in between I wrote another book on currency, which is now out of date because it dealt with the situation before Brexit.
Oh, okay, so that's Brexit, the difference between the two
Brexit
editions.
Brexit has changed everything.
Yeah.
And so the new book is not changing the fundamental arguments in this book, but trying to make it a bit simpler for people who've never been involved in economics and don't understand a lot of the terms. Mm-hmm. And trying to make it very simple and answering questions in a way that the way that people ask them, where's the money going to come from, and these sort of questions.
Because that was really
trying to address that.
That was really one of the big the rock on which a lot of things foundered during the last IndieRef, wasn't it? And Andy, a lot of people were very concerned and convinced by these, you know, the project fee and economic arguments. What do you think, you know, were the main flaws in the strategy the last time as regards the currency question?
Well, I think the main flaw was that this was never really addressed before the referendum. I mean, myself and Ronnie Morrison got together as a result of the campaign. We were involved in the campaign. We didn't know each other. But we were both involved in the campaign and we were both alarmed about the idea that we should go ahead and have independence and leave the pound in place and leave the structure like that. We saw that as a disaster. And so we were talking about that, and it was in the process of looking at it. His background is in business, and he was looking at it from a business point of view, and also looking at the... He's done a lot of work on the currency, so he was knowledgeable about that subject. I, on the other hand, had done quite a lot of work on economics, and it was the economic side that I was looking at. So we put both sides together and I thought, let's try and address this issue in a way that is clearer. And indeed, if there had been a clear understanding of where they were going, they wouldn't have got into trouble as they did at the end of that campaign, when the other side started to pose questions about the currency. That needed to have been sorted out long before.
Well, at the time, it was a bit of a gift, wasn't it, especially to George Osborne, who just basically came out with, well, no, you can't
use the pound.
You can't use the pound, which might have been rubbish, but or ill-founded, but nevertheless had a big effect.
Yeah,
well, so it left them completely open to that, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was utter rubbish, because the pound is an international currency and anybody could use it at any time. Mm-hmm. So it was really the question, the simple difference was between using the pound and being part of the pound structure. You know, anybody can use the pound at any time. It's an international currency, open in that way. But to use it, you know, as your national currency was raising other matters, and it was that division that hadn't been dealt with and was it was a gift to the other side.
And it's still an area of considerable controversy when you look at the Growth Commission and motions at the last SNP conference about currency. It's still an area that causes a lot of debate and a lot of dissension, really, isn't it?
Well, that's true, but it has made huge steps since the last time.
Mm-hmm. In what way, Andy? Can you explain that to us?
We produced the book challenging mm-hmm. the position that they had adopted the last time in February of 2014. And the referendum was in September. So we had some months we were putting the arguments. I have to tell you, very few people would read the book. We had very little discussion about the issue, because most people said to us, look, the referendum's on the cards, it's all been sorted, the question of the currency is all sorted, Alex Salmond's got it all in hand, don't rock the boat. So that was very much the feeling at that time, and we were all in it. What, of course, happened was that people saw what a disaster that lax attitude was, because when it came to the crunch, the other side kept their powder dry until the last period, when the polls were moving in our direction,
and then moved in,
and it was in every news outlet all of a sudden, all at the same time.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen by accident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, Alistair Darling pounced, didn't he?
Yeah, they pounced, and they were waiting.
Fair enough,
To do this, and we had left ourselves in a weak position. So it's different now, because after that, a number of things happened that a lot of people didn't expect. The membership of the SNP rose dramatically when everybody thought it would fall.
Yeah.
People realised that they had been stitched up in this process in a number of ways. And one of the things they realised was that this business about the currency needed a bit more examination. At that period, we got loads of demands for people to read the book. And I spent a lot of time trying to explain, and have been doing ever since, what the ideas were contained in that book. And I've been extremely busy since that time. I see from reading the press that many people have picked up quite a lot of ideas from that. So the situation is different. So now the issue of currency won't go away. Now, the SNP's position is that they are open to a new currency. Mm-hmm. Some argument about when.
About the timing, yeah.
There's a valid issue here,
uh-huh.
because we can't do it tomorrow, and it would take time.
It will take
time. So timing is a factor. But the idea that we should wait 7 or 8 years is a nonsense. You know, but we need a period of time to set up the institutions. So timing is a factor. But the important thing is the nature of that currency and its position in the domestic economy, because that's what's important. It's the economy that's important, not the currency. The currency's not important. It's the economy that's important, and the currency's got to serve the economy, not the other way around.
So just to... you just said that it's the economy that's important, not the currency. A lot of folk that I think would hear that might say, well, yeah, but if your currency tanks, then that's your economy's, down a plug hole as well. So they would see that, well, there was a link between the two.
There is a link between the two. But the link is this way round. You've heard people in the past argue monetary policy, where the relationship between the goods and services and the total amount of currency. And they, if you control the total amount of currency, it will affect the production. Now, there is a link. But the important link is the other way around. The link, it's no currency has any intrinsic value. No currency. Money has no intrinsic value. We know that from Adam Smith. He made that clear in 1775. It hasn't changed.
That's our world-famous Scottish economist.
It's our world-famous, the most famous economist and the most renowned economist in the world.
Yeah.
He made that position clear at that time, and it's never been challenged. People can see that it is a valid argument. Now, if that's the case, that means that money itself, or currency, can't enhance the value in a society. It can't make you richer or poorer. It can't enhance it. But what it can do is it can interfere with the market arrangements, and that can damage the economy. So it can damage the economy by not operating properly, but it can't make you richer. If you have a different currency, that won't make you richer. Currency doesn't play that role. So the important role is that you've got to look at is how does the economy function. Our economy is functioning very badly compared to what it could be doing.
You mean the Scottish
economy? British economy. And the Scottish economy, as a part of that system, is functioning badly. And if we could get it to function better, then we could become a lot wealthier. And that's obvious. Now, currencies are a very important part of that, because the currency we've got now is undermining our economy, not helping it. That's why we talk about a clean currency, because the currency that we have now is corrupt, it is not operating properly within the economy, it's not helping the economy, it's allowing certain people to extract wealth from the economy rather than earn it. And that is undermining the working of the economy.
The sort of money men, the finance sector, where people are sort of virtually betting on our economy, like in the same way as, am I right in thinking, you know, that there are people that are really pro-Brexit that are going to benefit from our economy doing badly?
Oh, absolutely. And the people who've been behind Johnson, who've given him considerable financial support, the hedge fund.
Yeah.
Their whole purpose is to have a situation of uncertainty.
Sort of disaster capitalism.
In uncertainty, people will pay over the odds for more certainty in the judgments that they're making. Mm-hmm. That's ideal for hedge funds. That's how hedge funds make money. They don't create wealth. They extract wealth from people who are in a situation that is worrying them. And worry is a good thing for them. It's not a good thing for the economy. No, the economy has got to be looked at completely differently.
So then the economy, the goods and services in the economy, that's what produces wealth, is it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's where all wealth comes from. And money is just an exchange value. It exchanges the goods and services. And money reflects the value of the goods and services which it is exchanging. And it stands to reason that if you do not have goods and services to exchange, then you don't have any value in your currency. If you have a lot of effective goods and services which other people want and want to exchange with you, then you have a strong currency. Right. The two things are related.
Andy, what kind of feedback have you been getting from your book?
Well, we've been doing this from the first book was, the reason why I've been doing these sessions is the first book we thought was a bit too complicated for somebody to pick up and read it. And in fact, it's not really the most attractive approach, but it's contains quite a lot of the fundamental arguments. So that does one thing. It tells other people in economics and elsewhere what our argument is and where to go. But it doesn't win out over a lot of hearts and minds in the street.
No.
So what we had to do is to, A, work on that, and therefore these sessions where we can discuss it. Because it actually isn't all that complicated. And if people sit down and look at it, they very quickly, without any sort of background in economics, can very quickly pick up these ideas and work out the ideas right. It's not complex, but it does need attention. So the idea was that we do that. And the other book, the more recent book, is looking at those fundamental ideas in the new situation we're in. Right. Looking at the current situation so that we can address all the questions that we're now trying to address and see how, you know, the implications.
Just a bit of background information for folk who are listening to this, that Andy's just a couple of times referred to these sessions. And what this chap is doing is completely, you know, given of his time and energy and experience to agree to go and set up maybe a 6-week study course on currency for, you know, any group of people who are interested in it. So I've done one of them. I think I probably wouldn't do me any harm to do it again, but I didn't actually find it as straightforward to take on board as Andy said. But I did one of them associated with, Glasgow North West. There was about 6 or 7 of us got together every week for 6 weeks with Andy, and he took us through the basics of these books. So that's what this chap's doing, and if anyone listening to this interested in... get in touch with
them. You've been in quite a lot of different Yes groups, Andy, have you not? Jilly, that's here, has also been attending your seminar, so I'm going to swap over with her because she's got more in-depth knowledge of it than myself, so I'm going to...
Jilly's been involved
for the moment, and we've got Jilly coming in.
Oh, we're swapping over
media
headphones here.
Guru.
Is chairs.
On the radio. Okay, so... Okay, Jilly, are you okay there?
Yeah.
Headphones on. All right, folks. That's it. Just get yourself comfortable.
Okay?
Yeah, all good. Right. I am definitely the man in the street. right. So just to let you know, right. This is my thoughts on currency. Right. If every country in the world, rich or poor, could set up their own currency, why can't we? It was so ridiculous. It was a red herring, a tax on us, John Indy ref, right? But that's, you know, when we talk about how do you talk to currency? So when you're talking about it, right, this is actual, when we're there, how we're going to do it, right? For people like myself, right, who look at it like that, you know, I'm obviously pro-Indy, right? But... it just seems like, I'm not that bothered about the details myself, right? Because it just strikes me as that this is too difficult to get my head around, or I don't have the time to get my head around, or I'm too busy doing other indie stuff to get my head around. But I see it being really important in terms of, you know, actually policymaker and influencing people. And obviously, maybe like yourselves, you know, Jilly, you know, and Marlene, you know, does it help you talk better?
I can understand. So, from what you've just said, so in a way, you're not that much bored about it because, yeah, if everyone else can set up their own currency, why on earth couldn't we in a country like this? But on the other hand, I can understand people, you know, the man and woman in the street, have got fears and anxiety, and they're about pretty basic stuff like, what about the money in my bank account? I mean, is that just going to, you know, night after Indy, when we swap over, is that all just going to, you know, dwindle away? What about the cash in my pocket? What about my pension? Eventually, what about my pension?
Practical.
They're really practical, and they're quite understandable fears for people, anxieties for folks.
Try it out with me, right? I'll go with man in the street, doesn't know much about it, not a pretty, you know, lukewarm indie, whatever. Okay, so tell me, I'm really worried about the currency, right? You know, what's going to happen to my pay packet? I've got family to feed, so...
Yeah, well, I'm not at a point with it where I can easily give a good answer to that.
Yeah. Has Jilly got her hand up
the
there?
The problem with that question, the problem with that situation and the background in which we are discussing it, is that we don't move from no knowledge. We move from the existing ideology.
Sorry, give me a second.
This is IndieLive.radio. Unfortunately, we cannot legally livestream music.
Oh my goodness.
Tune in to IndieLive.radio for audio.
Technical issue, folks.
You know, that sounded quite good, yeah.
It did, but
actually, that was quite opportune that came in at this stage, because what it does do is it raises the point that I was trying to make. Hmm. You're not talking in a vacuum.
Yeah.
Because you've got all sorts of ideas. The media have given you all sorts of ideas about the currency.
Yeah.
And so you've been fed
exactly.
That. You've had that background noise.
It's just the fear.
In your ear.
Yeah, well done.
That background noise is there.
I would say.
You can't, somebody can't simply answer your question about your fears.
Yeah.
Because they don't know how you've fed into the background noise of where you are. What you can do, of course, however, is you can say, well, let's look at what a currency does and what it doesn't do, and what would happen if we changed over from one currency to the other. And if we did that at midnight tonight, how would the values from one set of goods and services change to the values of the new currency? And both currencies have got no value. Mm-hmm. So one loses it overnight and one gains it. How does that happen? Mm. How does that work? What effect has it got on my bank account? Mm-hmm. These are all very important questions. But they're questions that need to be addressed you need to have a little bit of understanding of what the money system is and what it does. And that's why I'm doing it in the process of little sessions.
Yeah.
Because in those sessions, we can address those sort of questions. And we can address them by going back to the fundamentals.
Uh-huh.
And it's most people, if I say to somebody, money has no intrinsic value, which is of course correct, they won't know what I'm talking about.
No, they'll say, going to give me your wallet then.
Yeah, your money's no good to you. Right? They don't understand it. And it's not because they come from a vacuum. It's because they're coming from a set of ideas about what the importance of money is. But let me put this question to you. The people in Greece found out how powerful the money system could be, because they elected a government and decided that they were going to get rid of austerity. Mm-hmm. They were going to change it all, and they were going to move into a different situation where they wouldn't have mass unemployment, where they would have decent wages, and all the sensible things that an economy should have. They were stopped from doing that.
Uh-huh.
And the thing that was used to stop them was the money system.
Yeah.
the money system. Now, money has no value.
Mm.
So how is it possible for them to have been stopped
mm-hmm.
by the money system?
Mm.
That's because of the ideology and the system that they're in and that we are currently in. We're in a currency system which is corrupt and is interfering with the way that our economy works. So you can't just move on to independence and bring the rubbish with you, because you'll corrupt the new system. Mm. I don't want independence on the basis that I'm going to live exactly the same and be screwed in the same way that I am now. That's not what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
When I'm talking about political independence, I don't just want a new flag, you know, to mm-hmm. wave.
Mm-hmm.
I want a new economy,
mm-hmm.
which is based on a much different basis, which is fair and equal and more progressive.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is possible. Mm-hmm. None of it is rocket science. It's all possible. But vested interests, who incidentally own all the media,
there you go.
The same vested interests don't want us to debate or discuss or examine carefully.
Yeah.
So they put out a great smokescreen about currency. You'll hear about international exchange value.
Yeah.
If you do that, the international value of your currency will fall,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
and all of these things will happen. This is a smokescreen. It needs examining.
Okay. Just say it's interesting, Andy, as well, because when the focus is on the smokescreen, as you say, on the debate, they call it the establishment. It's the framing. It's their goalposts, their goals, their rules, and their set of phrasing. So the more we answer back on that set of phrasing, the less chance we have of getting to another debate, which is the one that you're talking about. And very interestingly, you mentioned Greece. I learned as well, my brother lives in Cyprus, and I learned firsthand the same thing happened over there. It was actually a corrupt Greek government that got in hand with the, what do they call them, the investment banks, one of the investment banks, and the Troika, as Yanis Varoufakis called them, the Troika.
Yeah.
So with the best will in the world, nothing would have enabled them to do what all the people wanted them to do, because, as you said, that system was in place. And when you were saying fairness and equality and prosperity, but those are all the things that we talk about in independence. So I actually completely concur with what you said, that theoretically and emotionally, philosophically, all of those things which Scotland seeks independence are very much tied into a currency and the prosperity of its nation through its own currency. I can't see how otherwise it would work.
Just to take devil's advocate a little bit.
Always good to do that.
You know, going back to Greece, I mean, Greece did have a lot of debt, though, didn't they? And there were also a lot of Greeks who were quite happy not to pay the taxes that they owed. I mean, it wasn't just a question of we nation at the east end of European Union being held back by whoever the Troika were. They weren't in a good spot.
It was about governance.
It was a corrupt Greek government.
That's a very strong word to use, isn't it? Well, corrupt. And actually, if you've got a country that's in debt and not collecting its own taxes, well, they're in trouble anyway.
I would agree.
And then they want to do away with austerity. How can you do that if you haven't got good governance?
I would agree, but I don't think it's. I'm putting this in because I've got quite personal knowledge of this from family. So and it really helped me understand an awful lot about the whole thing. I couldn't believe. I thought it was all the blooming Greeks and the Greeks. Yes, absolutely. They had no tax system and it was shambolic, and absolutely that was the case. And Papadopoulos, I think it was, that the government was corrupt at the time. He was ordering military equipment with nothing. You know, he was in league. The government was in league with Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs faked, cooked the books. So they got into the EU.
But it's kind of important because of the understanding of Greece.
There's a difficulty here.
Yeah, sorry.
There is a difficulty here. Because to some extent, we're following all of the media's information.
Exactly.
And we're regurgitating. They're regurgitating what they have already fed into it. The problem with Greece, yes, of course, there was big, wealthy people in Greece weren't paying their taxes. They're not doing that in Britain. Britain's got one of the biggest areas of tax evasion in the world.
Of course.
But that isn't what is at the centre of the problem.
No.
That isn't what's at the centre of the problem. What's at the centre of the problem, quite simply, is this. We have a currency which is a fractional reserve currency. A fractional reserve currency means that the bankers are holding your money, which incidentally becomes theirs legally once you put it into their bank. They're holding their money, which used to be yours, and they are applying a situation where only a relatively small fraction of that is retained, the rest of it is used for other purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So they're using your money for purposes which you didn't approve of.
So they're off investing it making money out of it.
Exactly.
Now,
you
could go into a merchant bank and make an investment of that nature and get a higher rate of interest. And that's fair enough because you're taking a risk with your money to get a higher rate of interest. But the normal banking system, that's why they were talking about fire doors The normal banking system was using your money anyway to make big mm-hmm. investments to suit them. And it's a heads they win, tails you lose. Because if their investments do well, they carry away the profits. You get nothing. If, on the other hand, things go badly, hey, wait a minute, you'd better bail them out. They talk about a lender of last resort. You know who that lender of last resort is, don't you?
That'd be us.
That'd be me.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So that's the corruption of the system. The system is actually putting out, and you talked about debt. We've got a mountain of debt. We've got higher debts than I've ever been in peacetime in Britain now, and mm. they're rising rapidly. Mm-hmm. And they've been rising rapidly in the last 40 years, much faster than they've ever done historically. So we've got this huge mountain of debt. Mm. And that's because the people who control the financial system are pumping out debt and increasing the money supply, while at the same time, the goods and services are not growing at the same level.
Mm-hmm.
The relative figure is something like 9% per annum in the money supply mm. and 2% in the goods and services.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
What happens? Money has no value. So where does all this new money, new debt, get its value
mm-hmm.
from an increasingly smaller group of goods and services?
Mm-hmm.
It gets it from there.
Yeah.
That's the corruption. And it's massive.
Mm-hmm.
It's not small, it's massive. Now, if you were to do that at home, if you were to go home and in the shed produce £5 notes out of a machine... And you could then go out
and rumbled well.
Those £5 notes wouldn't be worth anything, but then neither is any money worth anything. It's only if it's accepted that it's worth something.
Yeah.
But if your £5 notes are going out in circulation, you can then do quite well out of that. But mm-hmm. what you're doing is you're stealing that value from other people's goods and services.
Mm.
Your money's is a phony money. It's not real money, right? And so is theirs. Quite a lot of theirs is phony money as well. That's why there's a gap between the two things. So that's why I'm talking about corruption. That's corruption.
Yeah.
And that's on a massive scale, much bigger than the issue of people not paying their taxes. That's important, mm. but this is much bigger.
Is this what you call corruption? Is this what... the former head of the Bank of England, whose name escapes me this minute,
Mervyn King,
exactly,
Mervyn King.
King calls out the alchemy.
That's exactly what.
Mm. To me, alchemy is. To me, alchemy works better as a phrase to use because it avoids some of the pitfalls if you call something corrupt. But just to be clear, it's the same sort of thing that you're referring to and he's referring to.
He's referring to exactly the same thing as we were referring to.
Yeah.
Our book was out for his.
Oh, right.
Our book was out for his. And we argue that the system is creating surplus money and it's that surplus money that caused the financial collapse.
Yes, yeah.
He wrote a book a couple of years after us, 3 years after us, in which he says something similar. Different language, of course. He talks about alchemy, and he talks in terms, and he doesn't design it for the man in the street.
Mm.
It's not written for the man in the street. Mm-hmm. You'd have to know quite a bit about monetary terms and the system in order to get out what he's talking about. But what he's talking about is exactly the same as we are talking
about. Right. Okay,
calling it sound different, and he acknowledges that is a major problem. Incidentally, he also acknowledges that if you had a full reserve currency, like we are advocating,
mm-hmm.
it would solve that problem.
Can you explain full reserve?
Just going to ask
well,
that.
Well, yeah. I will in a minute.
All right.
But... if we had the full reserve system as we are advocating, he acknowledges would solve that problem. But he says we couldn't have it because the City of London wouldn't have it.
Yeah, right.
And he's right.
But you see, I just think alchemy is just a good word to use, because alchemy was about, you know, turning base metal into gold, and it was this whole philosopher's search, and, you know, it's even a Harry Potter book
and
about
it's a Paul Coelho book, the Brazilian guy, Paul Coelho.
Yeah, you know, so I do think it's a good term to use, but that's really helpful to me to know that the same thing.
But the difference is, and he acknowledges this, the difference is in relation to a full reserve currency and a fraction reserve currency.
Yeah.
And we're arguing a full reserve.
So why wouldn't London have it?
Well,
that's just because that's where they make all the money from a fraction.
Is it because they need gambling? Fluctuation.
Let me put it to you this way.
That's a good question.
Suppose you had a team of the International Union of housebreakers or burglars, and you ask them, would they agree with a system that locked the doors and made it less effective to get in?
That's your answer, Ken.
They would be unhappy.
They would be unhappy.
Because that would interfere with their income.
Make it more difficult,
now,
right.
London is a big, huge money market, which makes great amount of money out of the existing system.
Mm.
So
I think
I'm
there's a new book in there to be called The International Union of Currency Housebreakers.
Burglars.
Burglars Associated.
Money burglars.
The question about the difference between full reserve and fractional reserve, the easiest way to explain that is to say that the fractional reserve system, nobody designed this. Nobody sat down and said, this is the fractional reserve system, this is how it should work.
Mm.
It grew from trickery by the bankers learning that they could delude people by taking... They worked out scientifically how much people actually take out the bank and what they normally need.
Mm.
And they decided,
course,
if they're not going to use it, we'll use it. Right?
Yeah.
So they did that historically. That's how they got into that situation. Mm. That's how they got into working it. And they do it internationally now because you can do it at a much lower level if you do it internationally. Because if you get into, because when they started to do it, they started getting into trouble when they were smaller banks. At one time, the banking system in England was nearly wiped out by, you know, problems of that sort of nature. So what they do is they do it internationally. They do it, first of all, nationally. One bank lends to the other. Mm-hmm. If your bank's in trouble, you call on us and we help you. But we know that if you do it on an international basis, if it's big trouble, the whole system collapses.
Yeah, that's what happened in 2008.
The whole system collapses.
And
so the system is unsustainable.
Mm.
That cannot operate. Now, a full reserve system is to make it simple, it's like the mutual building societies that we used to have.
Mm-hmm.
You put your money into the building society, the building society lends money to build a house, and they make a difference between the interest rate they charge you for borrowing and the interest you get for lending. It's a difference there that makes a difference, and they run a system which is straightforward. Now, that system is, on the whole, a full reserve system. There's some technical arguments about aspects of that, but let's not get into that. That is more or less a full reserve system, provided that the government is behind it and backing the system and making sure that it's operating. If the Scottish government was behind the currency and backing it, as they need to do through the central bank, then the system could be operated on a full reserve basis. And that would be of great advantage to the people.
What other countries around the world doing what you're talking about? You know, what you're looking for? Is there any country in the world that is implementing a system, as far as you know, what you're looking for?
That's a question that's been asked several times.
I bet
you know. And the reality of that is that the banking system, in many ways, was started... Holland, to be more accurate than Britain, but it's been in Britain for a very long time, and in Scotland in particular, the history of banking.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be surprising that some of the advances were made, in Britain. Now, and it was in Scotland that the system of the joint stock companies really developed. It came from Holland, as I said, but it was really developed in Scotland. So we've got a tradition of opening up the new avenues in banking in the past. The old banking system was turned on its head after the Thatcher, well, actually before Thatcher, the neoliberal changes, but Thatcher associated with it. All of the changes they made have created the problem we've got now. Mm-hmm. The problem we've got now, the seeds were there before, but it's been widely exposed. Now, right throughout the world, this is now falling apart. Mm-hmm. Problems everywhere by the system. The international system is in dire trouble. The Chinese are putting forward proposals for changes, mm-hmm. which are not a million miles away from what Keynes wanted to do in the international system after the war. Very similar ideas, because the international system of exchange is not functioning properly. Mm-hmm. And we can see from what's happening with the struggles internationally, the trade challenges, yeah. that there are problems. So the international situation on banking is pretty delicate and is looking even more insecure mm-hmm. at the moment. So the change is necessary, and we're going to have to, we can't go back to something, we're going to have to go forward.
Mm.
But we can learn from the past, you know, to go forward.
Yeah.
So I think that the best place that we can look at is look at our own history. We had full reserve banking in Scotland. We had a bank, the Airdrie Savings Bank, until recently,
mm-hmm.
which was full reserve.
Yeah.
It went...
What happened, yeah.
It went under.
I was a customer there.
It went under.
Because I was looking to join it.
I did, after well, breath.
What happened? If
well, there's a bank which went through the financial crisis, which was in existence yeah. since the 1830s. It went through the financial crisis without needing any help from yeah. the government, unlike the Royal Bank of Scotland and all the rest of them. It didn't need help. It went through without difficulty. But what happened to them, and myself and Ronnie and others were looking at the possibility of trying to keep that bank going
yeah.
because that model was the model that we were yeah. wanting to build on. But what happened to them is that we're in a situation where the banking laws and arrangements are made by the government in Westminster and applied throughout the UK. And they control the banking arrangements. Now, you may have noticed that you don't get any interest on your money.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, you know, your money you put in the bank. If you borrow money, you'll pay a lot of interest, huge amounts sometimes,
mm.
especially if you've not got any.
Yeah.
But you don't get interest. The banks don't pay interest
yeah.
on the money that you put into the bank.
Yeah.
The building societies used to. And it was on that that they built up their business. Now, if you're closing off the interest legally, if you're tying it up legally and forcing all the banks to operate on that basis, and if at the same time you're insisting that the banks contribute to a central fund to help when there's a panic in the banking system, and you've got a system that doesn't need to do that, because you're not going to be in that position. You're not a fractional reserve bank. If you're taking from them that way and preventing them from getting the interest rates for the money, you kill off
the God.
So
that's shocking.
Isn't it?
So you're actually getting rid of that system.
It was effectively, they got rid of it.
Effectively getting rid of that secure system.
Yeah. So were they actually prevented from offering interest? I mean, could they... They really couldn't do it?
A bank has to operate within the laws yeah, and yeah. regulations that apply within the state.
Yeah.
That's why it's so important that when we're talking about the currency, we're talking about the constitution and what should be established and what should be established. Yeah. So the bank will operate, it has to operate within the laws. Mm-hmm. It can't deviate from that.
Yeah. Now, if maybe that's something we should move on to, about, you know, what conditions, kind of background conditions in Scotland after independence or, you know, working towards it, we'd need to help that full reserve set up operate.
Well, I tell you what, just to give you some idea of the time here, right? It's nearly 10 to 12, okay? So we can keep this conversation going for another 5 minutes, right? Then what we'll do is we'll let the last song play out and it'll go into the news and that. We can have a little break and come back maybe about 10 past 12, and it's 1 o'clock, we're phoning. Right, about 10 past 12. So we'll continue for another 5 minutes then. I'll let you know, right? We'll shoot over to the music.
Any money songs? I'm just thinking people would shout in for some money songs.
Money songs.
We're talking
money
about money. Money's too tight to mention. All those things.
Dollar. Much, we put out some...
Moby, dollar.
We actually played some Sex Pistols yesterday.
Did you play the right?
Oh, yeah, done it again. It was for Boris Johnson. Yeah, it was about Liar. For the Sex Pistols.
Thanks, Bill. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Good set. It's clean currency is the hashtag, so chuck in some suggestions if you're watching and listening, because, it's been written in lots of songs. There's a reason it can expand people's lives or it can shrink them, depending on what the system is.
We're kind of lacking in the music on...
ABBA, money.
You may have that.
Well, it's
okay.
Obvious there's not simple answers to a lot of those questions.
Absolutely.
So the answers are usually what they are already feeding you.
Do you know what? It sounds as if we're actually coming up to a wee break anyway, aren't we? So I tell you what, let me see if I can get an ABBA song on.
I was just going to say, Kev, actually, maybe something to think about was on Twitter. I was just reading before I came over. It was really interesting what's happening in the States, because what they're doing in the States is they're really pushing down on the dollar, and then that being in the international system and very important to us, the US dollar and the UK, the pound sterling. Is it shows us how vulnerable we are to a system if it collapses, because what happens in the US happens, kind of has an impact over here. So maybe that's something we can talk about after lunch.
Yeah.
And you know, the trade deals and Trump kind of devaluing, there's a discussion about him devaluing the dollar and how that would affect us. Yeah. So that's maybe something for after lunch.
Are you okay to stay on after 11?
Andy, how hardcore are you?
Oh, I'm not. I can stay on for a wee bit. Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. Great.
We'll get topped up with coffee and all that.
Yeah.
So I tell you what, why don't we kind of start a wee break just now and we'll play it.
Get an ABBA song.
There's see Val over there. Are you everything okay? Yeah. All right. Okay. Val's okay. So we'll have a wee break and we'll put on a song. This one's
a money.
Andy, this is for you.
Oh, what is it?
Let's see. Oh, no, it's not. It's honey. I was going to say it's money, 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 right? This is because I don't have my specs. It actually says honey, honey. Really? Is it an ABBA?
It's an ABBA, so an H and an M, but hey.
Honey, honey, right. Okay.
Money's too tight to mention. Any more suggestions?
Get him a pair of glasses, somebody.
I need to take out my glasses. I'll do that at the break, right? But however, I have found that actual song.
Tell Andy's wife that's not the one he requested.
This is one for Andy Anderson for you, my friend.
There we go.
We've got Marlon here with a question for Andy. Marlon, would you like to kick this off, please?
Yeah. So just before the break, there, Andy, we got talking about. We got talking about what do we need in the background, going on in the background in work done by, presumably the Scottish Government or perhaps a finance, think tank, to give us the background conditions that we'll need to set up the kind of currency, full reserve currency, that you're advocating. So I just wondered, because there is a whole, you know, there's a Mark McNaught's spent a lot of time and effort, building up a draft constitution. And if I'm remembering correctly, it does have bits in it that are to do with backing up a currency. But wondered if you had anything to say about that.
Yeah, well, one of the important things of any currency is that it has to be legal tender and it has to be tied to the government who are the issuing authority. And it's very important It would be important for Scotland that we have a situation where we have strong government control and regulation to run the banking system. So we need a structure that does that. But if it was not in the Constitution, then it's something that could be changed from one government to another. Right. And major changes could be made. So,
it wouldn't be protected.
It wouldn't be protected. Right. And our view is that currency, particularly in the world that we're living in now, where there are major problems all over the place, that we really need some protection for people who are using that currency and are operating within it. So that's why we see it as important. Not a significant part of the Constitution, but very much a part of the Constitution that, the currency has to be controlled and in the hands of the government, and monetary control and supply is going to be controlled by the government.
Right.
Well, the central bank
through
the government. So that's the role we see there. Also, what has to be recognised is that we're so used to the fact, because of the pound, that the currency would be an international currency. But the currency we're talking about would be a domestic currency. It wouldn't be an international currency. It would be like most currencies in the world, which are domestic currencies. And obviously, we're a small country like Scotland, particularly if we want a currency to be related directly to the economic, you need that close link. So you want a domestic currency.
So that would just put us into the same category of as countries like Denmark, Norway, Iceland.
Iceland.
Probably most small countries throughout the European Union.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, countries like Norway, which are about the same size as ourselves, and Iceland, which is about the size of Edinburgh.
About the size of Edinburgh,
in terms of population. So, but they still manage.
Yeah.
And Iceland trades significantly across the world without any difficulty, but not with its own currency. And we, of course, would be in the same position.
I was just going to say there about you're talking about protections within the system. We had just before the break there, we were talking about some social media comments and things that were up there about international currency with the dollar and how the fluctuations, instability, whatever is going on with the dollar, or say any other, but dollar's particularly important, isn't it, with the petrodollar, the US petrodollar. Thinking, could that be something that would be used as a positive, as a plus for saying reserve currency would protect us from something like that, from the weathers and the storms of an international currency, do you think?
Well, the international scene, both in trading terms and in currency terms, is very insecure, I would say. The dollar, the euro and the pound, of which I think the pound is the weaker of the three, have to operate helping each other to try and ensure that the international system is operating effectively to their satisfaction. Now, that's not actually happening very well. There are problems. That's not totally unrelated to the trading situation in the world. Hardly surprising when I put goods and services and money in a relationship. There is a relationship at international level as well, of course. In the international world, we've got, in a sense, three big blocks. You've got the EU as a trading block with very clear conditions and regulations, which we are currently in. You've got the group which is, to some extent, dominated by the Chinese economy, but across much of the East and Russia and elsewhere, which has a much looser relationship But there is a big trading group, and they operate as a group in some respects.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the Americans operating their hegemony over some other countries, and that forms another group. The idea that we can, all of this, the currencies is affected. Our currency has been falling since the Brexit idea was first mooted and is likely to go a lot lower because of the uncertainty of the situation of the UK. What people can see is that you need to, I mean, they talk about the World Trade Organization being the fallback position. Most countries are in that, but they don't use it.
Okay.
Most countries are in the World Trade Organization, but they don't use that. They use other, the Americans are in it. Many of the European countries are in it, but they don't use that. They use the EU or the or American systems. So that is a fallback position, which is a big club of one. if we end up in it, it's not going to be particularly effective. If we're, it will only be effective if we've got understandings and agreements. Now, people keep telling me, the media keep telling me, that if we go in the single market, we can't trade with China and with America and with other countries. The argument, what we read, is that the reason why Theresa May put it down as a red line that we had to come out of the single market was because it was going to interfere with our trading. We wouldn't be able to trade. That is just not true. We are now, we trade with America now. We're trading more goods and services with America than we are with any of the individual countries in the EU. So we do trade, and we trade with China, and we trade across the world. It's not true that we couldn't trade in the future if we were in the single market, but it is true that we'd have to stick to the trading standards of the EU.
Now,
the trading standards is vitally important. It's important to all the people in Britain. So the people who want to take away your trading standards, ask yourself this question. Who will that benefit? Who will gain from that?
Marilyn and I are both smiling at this point.
Many people will suffer severely from that. I mean, if you've got, if you're not allowed to use lead paint in child's toys, which are made in China, they can't come into the EU, any country that's in the EU, because we don't allow lead paint in toys that could be, you know, put to the mouth for very sensible reasons. That blocks that. But if you go out of the EU single market, you can then, of course, do things like that. But who gains from that? Only the people who want to cut corners, make big profits short term, and not in the interests of the economy as a whole, and certainly not in the, of the people. So that's the issue. That is the central issue.
And that's, I mean, hearing that described as you've just done it, that was pretty brief how you did it, actually, and succinct. And that just strikes me as being that is the kind of message that is so important to get out to people in Scotland. Because, I mean, I suspect that most Scots, whether at the moment they would support independence or not, actually would support that kind of financial policy. I mean, that kind of fits in with our kind of, you know, historical approach to how we how we'd like to run things.
So I agree, and it's, I think, again, it's because it's what we've been told. It's a very big gap between what we've been told and what's actual. And then there's a process getting to understand what Andy's talking about. And also what you were talking about there, Andy, as you said, very succinctly described, is just the same thing with trading as it is with money. It's who benefits. It's the same group with the same interests, really, is cutting corners and not for the benefit of the wider society. And everything about what Scotland is, whether it would be in constitution or money, economy, society, is the opposite. It's a complete antithesis of all that, isn't it?
And I don't know if you remember when Gordon Brown, you know, in 1997, when Labour got in, New Labour got in, and Gordon took over as, you know, the Chancellor, he used to use this particular adjective, loads and loads, which is prudence. Well, that's a noun, but we wanted to be prudent, and we're after a prudent policy. And I used to laugh at it. I used to think, oh, that's your Scottish roots coming through there, Gordon. But actually, that's still present in a Scottish kind of way of thinking about things, and it's a good one prudence, to follow. So prudence. I think we should pick it up and run with it.
Yeah, oh, prudence and fairness that runs through everything, doesn't
fairness,
it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's very much my background as well. That's probably why I'm so interested in economics. That waste, and is something that you're against. You want to make sure that resources are properly used and effectively used. And that's at the very centre of economics. That's what it's really all about. So I've got no qualms with that, but I've got a great deal of difference between how some people apply it and use it and and abuse it.
I just wanted to say, I know Marlene's been to some of your groups as well, one of the things... The most important thing that I found enlightening was my total misunderstanding or my belief of what I've been told to the reality, which is, yes, that money, wealth, comes from labour and services, labour and services, is that right? Is that labour and services, wealth and resources, that's right. And not from a kind of out there, fluffy, pretend money, which does not have value in and of itself. That starts to completely change the debate. Once that penny drops, then you realise it is a smokescreen, and it would make perfect sense to be in control of that, because as you said, and Marlene put that brilliant quote out that you had, I don't want another flag to wave. I want a new economy for Scotland. And it is a bit like single, on you go, way out into the courtyard, run about, but by the way, we're going to tie your hands behind your back. You know,
that sort of... Tie your laces, something
like that. So you can't really run free. And then hearing this about how aligned we are at the moment in the system that we're in to the fluctuations and the instability, as you called it, the instability in the international markets, and the traders with those same morals, values, whatever you want to call them, however questionable, waiting to pounce. So we've got, and then we bring in the geographical, we bring in Scotland, the brand, the geographical protected areas, all of those.
Well, of course,
the provenance of our products. Again, as you say,
there is another big issue right on our shoulder, and that is the question of global warming. It's a huge problem. It's a huge problem.
Yeah.
And the only way that it can be intelligently addressed is major government investment. Major government, not piddling around. This is big stuff. It needs to be done. And it's desperate. I mean, governments, the Scottish government, have declared a state of emergency. Well, it is. But if you've got an emergency, you do something about it.
Yes.
Yeah. We need to do something about it. Now, Scotland can't do very much about it until it gets control of its economy.
That's true.
Because we need huge amount. I can do buying the things. It can indicate the way it wants to move. And in some ways, it has been doing that.
It has achieved a remarkable amount, given the lack of of power. Yeah.
And compared to other countries, it's moved a great deal. But just think how far it could move if it could do the investment which it needs. It needs vast investment.
Yes.
Now, that is round our shoulder. And it's round everybody's shoulder.
Yes.
Donald Trump might not believe that it is real, but it's there. And it will come, and it will affect the American economy and every other economy.
Absolutely.
And so it's vitally important. So, to some extent, the sort of economics that we're talking about, if you look at what that means, we've got considerable unemployment in Britain and in Scotland. Now, they tell you that it's low. They tell you that employment is high, and that unemployment is not a problem. We've got huge unemployment in Scotland. Zero hours contract is another name for unemployment. Very low incomes and poor payment to workers is an abuse of labour, it's unemployment.
Yeah. Mm.
These people ought to be employed in a meaningful way.
Yes.
If people can't earn their living and feed their families
Absolutely.
Without state benefits,
they're
unemployed.
Yes, yeah. exactly.
They're not employed.
They're dependent upon
they're
the state.
They're not employed in an efficient way.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably why we've got the lowest productivity in Europe,
mm-hmm.
because we're doing this
Yes.
instead of doing something sensible. Now, if we had to respond, if we have to respond in a major way to climate change, that will require huge amounts of investment, huge amounts of real employment, and will create real wealth
Yes.
in considerable quantities. But it has to be directed and controlled centrally by the government. That is not liked by people who run a neoliberal system.
No.
Not liked at all.
No.
But it is necessary.
No. Have we touched on the Growth Commission yet? And your thoughts on it?
Not yet.
We haven't. Can I just follow up on that before we do it? Go on, Julie.
It was just tying into what you were saying about the climate change or green global warming, whatever. The examples of when the Scottish government have wanted to do things to ameliorate the situation, but in actual fact have had their hands tied, or for example, grants funding for wind power, etc., pulled away.
Yeah.
You know,
carbon
and then
capture involved just disappearing.
And that,
just
remember Alex Salmond talking about a long time back.
Well, George Osborne had promised £1 billion to look into climate carbon capture up, and it was going to happen in Aberdeen.
Oh.
He just withdrew it.
It's in my book.
Did he?
Says what?
It's in my book.
Oh, so there we are. And so it's all the great promises.
Yeah.
But then in actual fact, again, it's hands tied behind the back. I didn't realise that. Thanks, Marlene. Yeah. I didn't know that.
So is this, the climate change, which is, an emergency, if not more than that now, and it does have to be taken up. So, I mean, one of the reasons I'm in favour of Scottish independence is actually because I think we could do a lot more, not just for Scotland, but actually for the world in general.
Yes,
if we have a UN seat, we could be talking about it
mm-hmm.
and ways that we can to the mm-hmm. moment. But am I right in thinking, Andy, that this then, that need for a big investment from the government would be a kind of modern-day equivalent of what Keynes did after the Second World War with the... I learnt from you this term, multiplier effect. I love it.
You were listening, Marlene.
Because apart from anything else, I realised I am a direct product of Keynes' multiplier effect, because my dad came out of the army, got demobbed, 1945, got a job up making up at Pitlochry, making the hydro power, which was part of the
and then he
had a bit of money, and then he got married, and lo and behold,
there
I was.
Marlene, you're a living example.
I'm a living example of
Keynesian
economics. But going back to
is it a multiplier?
So would this be a kind of modern-day equivalent of that?
That's really interesting.
Well, in actual fact, yes, it would, and even on a bigger scale.
Right.
It's the same thing, but on a bigger scale. And it would have the same effects. But the reality is that Keynes was not liked by the powerful capitalist interests.
There you go.
But he had a friend in Attlee, didn't he?
Well, he had a friend actually in Churchill as well.
Because Churchill
had recognised that Keynes is one of the few people who recognised that what the Germans were doing would build up their economy
mm-hmm.
rather than destroy it, as many economists thought. Because Keynes was quite influential and made a major change, but we're not going to talk about that now. But the changes he made, more significantly, the changes made by the Labour government, the Attlee government, which were significant and of great importance, and to which we owe the health service, among other things, we need a change of that nature.
Right.
Of that significance.
Right.
And that cannot be done by a capitalist system on its own without government interference in the mm-hmm. market.
Yeah.
Can I jump in here, right? There's a couple of comments, right? And I've got no idea what this means, but I've got a feeling, Andy, you might. If I was to say to you, right? Somebody's posted on the chat box, Jordy, right? But somebody's also posted on Twitter about this, right? James D on Twitter. The Wargle experiment, does that mean anything to you?
Sorry?
The Wargle experiment, W-O-R-G-E-L, Wargle experiment.
No, can you explain what...
James D said, ask about the Wargle shilling and if he could apply something like that in a Indy Scotland. Somebody said maybe at council level. And Jordy's given me an explanation of it, right? He's posted it. And I'm actually not going to say it out because it's so confusing.
Okay.
That I'd have to leave that to Jilly to do it. But, okay, so we don't know about
okay,
the...
Okay, we can't answer
we can't
that
do one. That today. No. That's for another day.
That's for another day.
Thanks,
okay.
Jordy.
Do you know what? I'll just sit here and listen to you and not interrupt you. I'm not used.
But it's great that people are listening and tuning in, yeah. And also just to remind that if they miss this live, obviously yeah. It'll be coming back on podcast on the live stream.
Hopefully.
They can catch up on it, and then hashtag is clean currency.
It's clean currency. Hashtag Indie Live Radio.
Indie Live Radio. Yes, absolutely. Put that
well,
up, so.
Jordy has said something that I can say to you. Right, makes sense to me.
Go.
Right, that other Wargle stuff is just beyond my pay scale, is it, Jordy? Why would we use a pound or tie our currency to the dollar to the dollar or pound at the moment? It's toxic.
Absolutely. I mean, that's my point, that we shouldn't tie the currency. We have, you mentioned earlier on the euro dollar, which is an exception to the normal rule. And we have in Scotland, we are tied. Mm-hmm. To the euro dollar. That's a political situation. Mm-hmm. And we would be if we became independent as far as oil is concerned. I'm not going to bother too much about that for two reasons. One, oil is going to become a less significant part of our economy in the future. It's still significant and will continue to be significant, and we will still be tied in the euro dollar through oil. But it's going to become in the future less important, and we need to think much more in terms of the major investment that we've been talking about in terms of
green energy.
And that would be within our own currency, you know.
Yeah.
And I agree, we don't want to be linked to the pound or the dollar.
Well, there you go, Jordy. I hope that answered your question. Tried the word go, but who knows what that means.
I've just written down here something that came to mind. We were talking about, obviously, currency. Bristol Pound. In Bristol, they have their own beautifully produced notes, which I'm hoping that maybe you or Marlene will be able to answer this in terms of how that happens, how can someone do it, and is that something that could be replicated somewhere else? And just to explain to people watching and listening, it is a means of trade whereby certain shops and certain places around Bristol will accept it as their currency, and it encourages people to shop locally, and it encourages a connection with community. Right. Just thoughts on that?
Well, yes. The Bristol Pound is one example. There's a number of examples, and cryptocurrency is another example. Mm-hmm. But what that does, in a sense, the Bristol Pound, to use that example, is limited to a particular area.
Yes, yes, a micro
limited,
example.
And it's limited to local authorities and others agreeing to support it. It isn't legal tender,
and it
doesn't interfere with that system. But what it does demonstrate to you is that money is not important, which is the very point I started off. It illustrates that anybody can make money.
Yes.
And you can use anything for money. Mm-hmm. People in the past have used shells and other things
bartering.
For money. Bartering is another question.
Mm.
But something to exchange in terms of money, there's been different examples of that.
Mm.
Now, so it's not the money that's important. It's the goods and services. And that's coming back all the time. Come back when you hear about it. When people put the money in the front, as happened in Greece, and the goods and services to drag along behind.
Yes, yes.
It's like putting the horse, the cart in front of the horse.
Yes.
You know, it distorts the system. So the important thing is not money, mm-hmm. but you need to be able to try and use a system of money. As was said earlier, countries all over the world have mm-hmm. set up money systems. People in Bristol have set up a money system mm-hmm. which functions. You can set up money systems. They're not complicated. They're not difficult. But what you need to do, if you're doing it for the country and you're tying it in with the economy, mm-hmm. is to make sure that the control of that, the supply of the money, the control of the money, is it in central hands,
yes.
government hands.
And protected.
And protected.
Yeah. Yeah. That's yeah.
And the regulations yeah. Yeah. are used yeah. to control it.
Right. And that would be constitution. Right. That, yeah. that would be, yeah, that's important to tie that in, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there was, we touched earlier on, you know, if you're talking to someone, if you're having a conversation with someone, then it's not a neutral. You don't start from scratch. The person, there's always been background noise about currency, and mm-hmm. it's really hard. I was saying to Andy in the break, it's actually really hard to know how to cope with that and mm-hmm. to get the conversation kind of a little bit going a fresher direction. But mm-hmm. I was just picking up last week, I think it was, that Gordon Brown is... going to be launching a think tank to be called Our Scottish Future. So it's be called Our Scottish Future. It's launching at the end of the month.
All right.
And it's to make a progressive case for Scotland's role in Britain and to make that strongly. So fair enough, he's a unionist. He's yeah, quite entitled to
he's
do that.
Do
fair
that,
enough,
isn't he?
But one of the things that one of the things they're going to be dealing with is about discussion on the currency choices for Scotland and which is best for social justice. Mm. And the ones they mention are the euro, a Scottish currency, sterlingisation or the UK pound. Which of those is best for social justice? So I heard that and I thought, well, that would be a very good question to ask and answer. Which is best for Scottish social justice? Except that if you put it in the background of this is a think tank to promote the union, you kind of think that maybe the mind is already
just
made up.
Yeah.
But I just wondered, is that... It sounds like, you know, another example of background noise.
I'm hearing a vow. I can feel a vow in my bones.
Well, yeah. maybe, but it's also just more background noise. And it's yes. difficult to cut through it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's more of the background noise. And the biggest problem that we have in talking to ordinary people, we said earlier, if you talk to people in the street about the currency, they say, well, what's happening to my money?
Yes, just as you said, Marlene.
How does this work? And, I mean, these are elementary things that people are concerned about. And they want to know how the system works and how do I benefit from it and how do I use it and does it work? These are all very important practical questions. And they're not actually difficult questions. You know, as Kevin said earlier on, every country in the world has produced one, and they all work.
Absolutely.
So it's not it's not rocket science.
Not rocket science.
It can be done, and it can be done relatively easy, and sometimes done very quickly.
Yes.
In some cases, so it's not all that difficult. But of course, the people who have got interest in the existing system, and I understand that Gordon gets a paycheck every now and again from banking people. So he no doubt has an interest in
the
present system.
Oh, well, but let's give him the benefit of the doubt.
Well,
you know.
The fact that you get a paycheck from somebody doesn't change your values, but it is important to know where you're moving from. Now, the banks are the main source of the fog.
Yes.
Which creates, through the media... a distortion about the whole question of the currency. Mm. It's one of the main reasons why you can't have a discussion because you're not starting from
scratch.
You're not starting from a baseline. You're in a situation where you've already got all this stuff into your head from the
frame.
And you have to, if you're going to understand the system, you have to stand back and say, well, that's the existing one. Let's just put it on the shelf for a moment and imagine that it wasn't there and we had a...
That's a really good way of describing it.
For example, the fractional reserve system, which Gordon no doubt would tell us is a good system. But that system, nobody claims responsibility for it.
No wonder.
Nobody claims it, right? It's not a system that anybody says, oh, we, you know, we did this.
Yeah.
Because it's a god-awful system. Yeah. And we mentioned King recently. He said, of all the systems that we could have, this is perhaps the worst.
Yeah.
And he's right. You know, it's an appalling system.
Except for the bankers, of course.
The bankers like
I love it.
Again, this is tied into the gambling.
Because it works. It works for them.
But you
made reference to the Growth Commission, which
talks
a great deal about the existing system, and tests that would be made to see if our currency would be able to fit in with the system. The implication of that is that the pound system is a great one. It's fine. It's got no problem.
And there this again, is, the establishment yeah.
so
setting,
if your comparison
setting
is,
the debate.
Get something that can compete with that.
So that's a framework.
We're
sticking with that framework.
You're stuck in that framework.
It's
you
the
then
establishment
have to make that
frame,
comparison. But what if you say, well, wait a minute. Let's take Marvin King's view that it is a terrible system. He should know. He was in charge of it.
Oh. Yeah.
So let's take that view that it is a terrible system. Let's just put it to one side and say, well, what system do we need to set up? What system do we need? How would it work? How does it work? Now, people find this question about currency having no value, no intrinsic value, very difficult to understand. But it's not at all difficult. It's difficult in our heads because we are so used to the market system that we actually calculate value in terms of money.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We use money to calculate value. If you want to look at the value of a sack of spuds, you ask yourself, well, what's it worth? What can I get for it if I exchange it?
Yes.
So it's the exchange system
that
motivates your thinking is that way. But just think for a minute. Swiss family Robinson, you arrive on the beach, your family's got there, the boat is sinking, there's no inhabitants on the island, you've got to get whatever's on the boat of value, get it off, because you'll need it for your future.
Yes.
You've got a big box of newly printed £5 notes and a similar big box of carpenter's tools. Which do you take?
It's a no-brainer.
It's not difficult to work out that the carpenter's tools are going to be of value. You can use them.
Mm-hmm.
You can't use the £5 notes. There's nobody there. You can't exchange them with anybody. You can't get any goods. If you were in London and the boat was sinking, go for the money. Because you could use that money in the market system. So it has a value.
Mm.
But the value it has is its exchange value.
Yes.
It doesn't have a real value. Now, that's not difficult to understand. Everybody can understand that.
That's a really good example. It's simple, isn't it?
What you have to do is when you think about these issues, is you think about money as its exchange value. Now, the last thing you want is the exchange value to move a million miles away from the thing that it's exchanging with.
Mm.
So the closer the money is, Scottish currency, or a Bristol currency for that matter, the closer the currency is to the goods and services being supplied, the closer the link, the better the link, and the more realistic it is.
I've got one for you, right? So the Growth Commission, right, is basically giving us a standard framework that is used, right? They want us to stick with this standard framework, okay? Now, and you're suggesting we don't.
Well, theirs is not a standard framework. It's one that they put, one that the Growth Commission has put together.
Mm.
We've never seen anything like it before. It's been put together and it's presented as being a standard. It's presented. But it's presented to you, the six tests.
Mm.
It's presented to you on the basis of this is something that you would have to check out that it complies. And some of these things actually you can't check out if you look at them.
Mm.
It's not possible. But in any event, that's to one side. I think that Dr. Tim Rideout made the situation on the 6 points quite clear at the SNP conference. He did a better job than I could do in a few minutes on that point. But the issue itself is really one of comparison. Mm. With if you had the pound, you would have these advantages. Can the euro currency compete with that? That's a false situation. The pound is not stable, it's not reliable, it's not what you want to aim for.
It's not what we need, is it?
It's not what you need.
It's not what we need.
What you need is something better than that. Mm. So it's that you need to compare with.
Mm. Okay.
Not the pound.
I'm beginning to, after what, an hour and a half here, I'm beginning to kind of feel that maybe next time I'm talking to someone in the street, as it were, or, you know, the garden and the neighbours, that actually I might be able to make a better job of explaining that, actually.
Yeah, likewise.
You've kind of thrown in a few good, you know, moves to make to get the conversation on it going in a different direction. So yes, let's hope it carries on.
I'm actually thinking, like, this thing that you do, the course, you do it. I wonder if it's, talk to you a bit about this later, if it's transferable, if we can somehow live stream that out as a live stream. You could do it, sit here and give that course. I don't know if that would be possible.
Maybe do live chats and something and get questions and answers.
What I'm trying to do at the moment, and in fact I'm going over to Fife to an ex-lecturer from the university, who's retired, who is working with me to try and produce materials to run these courses.
Yeah.
Now, the thing about that is, you'll notice that on the course I had I had a video on the section dealing with Ronnie's contribution. Well, I then filled in.
Yes.
I played the video, I stopped it, and then discussed what he was saying.
It was extremely useful.
Now, what we're thinking of doing is something like that, where we have a session where we develop the techniques. Now, none of these sessions are the same, so it would be a standard one, but we don't have one fits all in this approach.
Well, I've got one for you then, right? Think about one that we could do, right, that we could live stream, if you're up for it, that could fit that scenario, right? Just one for you to think about it, because it's so important, and understand it. When I said earlier on, it was a very superficial thing, right? You know, basically every country's got a currency, so why can't we, right? But understand how to know more, right, is really important, hugely important. Sorry.
I'll just...
Just thinking, we probably to think about wrapping up, as it were. Sounds like we've kind of opened out a really good discussion, and from some of the comments online, folk are appreciating it.
Yeah.
And maybe we need to have you come back in, Andy.
I was thinking that as well, and maybe with an update on perhaps courses online. Just a couple of things. I don't know if there's anything else that you want to check on, Marlene. Val's just come over here with someone has tweeted, and they've just bought your book online, Andy. So there you are. Mm. So just going to... Several books.
Yeah, three of them.
Oh, right. Mm. Plural. So I'm just going to say now, so andersonpublications.co.uk.
Is that right? Andersonpublications.co.uk.
Andersonpublications.co.uk.